been going through 1 Peter, and we're going to move on a little bit from the subject matter that we've been talking about and move on to chapter 3. Now, when Peter is writing here, like all the other books in the Bible, it seems like they're not divided up in the original text into chapters, and it's sort of an ongoing teaching, and it's all tied together. So we're not leaving all of what we've talked about behind, but we're going to move forward. We're going to start in the beginning of chapter 3. We've already looked at the first passage here, talking about husbands and wives, but it'll help us bring some of the previous context into moving forward. Now, we were talking about governments and masters, slave owners that are unreasonable, governments that are unreasonable, and we are to submit and live peacefully with these authority structures, because Christ also submitted himself to the authorities while here on earth. Not in every instance, but yeah. Chapter 3, in the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands, so that even if any of them are disobedient to the word, and that's the gospel about Jesus, they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives, as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior. Your adornment must not be merely external, braiding the hair or wearing gold jewelry or putting on dresses. Excuse me, I got a scratch. But let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. For in this way, in former times, the holy women also who hoped in God used to adorn themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, just as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. And you have become her children if you do what is right, without being frightened by any fear. We'll pause here. Without being frightened by any fear. I think that helps bring it into the context of what we're talking about masters and governments and that sort of thing. I remember watching a thing on the Hebrew out of Genesis talking about women having pain in childbearing. All of you are familiar with that probably. The guy that was interpreting it was looking with a bunch of students at the wording there, and it doesn't mention childbearing at all. Now, I'm not a Hebrew expert or a Hebrew. Actually, that wouldn't be Hebrew. That would have been Aramaic, huh? I'm not an expert in those languages, so I'm not going to take a strong stand on this. But the impression that they gave was that it's not actually in childbearing, it's more in child rearing or in administrating the home. Women care about the family, people, their children, their husband, their parents. Those are the things. Women are way more interested in those relationships. Men go out and we work and we deal with the soil and things and conquering nature. That's more the natural man instinct, and that's what we do in a traditional home, right? The men have to go out, deal with the sheep, till the field, do those sort of things. And there's a curse after sin came into the earth. And the whole world is under this curse, and everything is difficult. When we go out into the field, there's thorns and thistles, and things won't grow, and there's rocks in the ground that get in the way, and everything we do, we have to fight the natural thing. We have to fight. You know, it seems to me that before the curse, there was no, what's it, the second law of thermodynamics, I think it is, where all things tend towards disorder. Imagine if everything was harmonious, right? You planted something and it grew where you planted. It just does what it's supposed to do. That would be awesome, but that's not the way it is anymore. You plant something and then you got to pay attention to it and get the weeds away from it and give it water because it's not naturally getting enough water, depending on where you're at. Or you have to choose a place that has plenty of water. And where there's plenty of water, there's lots of competition. And so you're fighting that competition. And then the women in the home, you train your child what to do, and it doesn't want to do it. And then it grows up and it goes its own way. And, you know, us husbands and fathers, we care. But I would put money on the fact that women pray for their children twice as much as us men do. We care. We'll throw up a prayer towards God. We'll have moments of intense caring. But women, they're spending their time there. They spend their time in caring and worrying about those relationships and how people are doing and whether or not they're living a good life and are happy and all those things, which I appreciate because when I'm sick, that's the time I care, right? And then if women aren't being as loving and caring, then I'm like, why aren't you there sitting by my side bringing me a tea? And so for women, this curse is that even though you care, and even though you're giving your heart, the rest of us are still going to go our own way. And we're just going to be like, ah. It's like the thorns and thistles for us men. And men, we bring the fear into that relationship. We're the king of the castle, right? We come home, and if we had a bad day at work, sometimes we bring that home. It's like, I'm hangry right now, and you're going to feel it. And so it says to the women, do what's right without any fear, because you have a God that you can trust. And he's there for you. And so it appropriately addresses the husbands immediately after. You husbands, in the same way, don't come home hangry. Live with your wives in an understanding way, as with someone weaker, since she's a woman. And show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life, so that your prayers will not be hindered. God wants us to live harmoniously and to care for those in our charge and for those whose charge we're under. That's what God cares about. He doesn't care who's the boss, because he's the boss. He's not insecure. He doesn't abandon his job at all. And so with us in our positions in life, as employees, as citizens, as wives, as husbands, as children, fathers and mothers, our positions are just, they're temporary in the big picture. But what God cares about is that we're living harmonious with one another and that we're caring for one another in whatever position we're in. And so we get into the passage that I want to talk about today, to sum up. And so he's not just talking about here the husbands and wife part. He's talking about the last chapter and a half to two chapters that we've already gone through. But to sum up, all of you, be harmonious. Now, I was thinking about harmonious because when you read this, you're like, be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted and humble in spirit. And you look at this and you might pick one or two, and it's probably not harmonious that you're going to think about. But I spent most of my time in preparation for this morning just thinking about harmonious. Probably because I immediately had some thoughts. Well, first I skipped it over, and then I was like, I should think about it for a minute. And immediately my world opened up to me, right? Because every relationship has something to do with harmony. Now, the people around me don't necessarily always think of me as harmonious. I'm usually pretty open with you guys about failing in certain areas. So I felt pretty good about also telling you about my positive ends of being harmonious. At work, one of the things that I found that I do, and one of the reasons I've been give or take successful at what I do at work, is because of harmony. We have a lot to do in the restaurant when there's only two or three of us. And I can usually work with one other person, and we have several sections in the kitchen that have to be taken care of. And I've learned early on, if I want things to go smooth, then whatever other people are, I just watch to see what other people are taking care of. You figure it out pretty quick. And then I just do the other things so that everything works together well. And then if they jump around too much, then I get upset. I'm like, stop. If you could take care of one area, I'll take care of the rest, right? Because we need to work together. And if you jump around too much, we lose harmony because I'm spending my entire time trying to be the opposite of you so that we can do it all. And I'm spending way too much time watching you. But when everybody's doing their job, it becomes harmonious. The pizza comes out, somebody's taking care of the orders, somebody's making the fries, and when people don't do their part, that's when things start falling apart. So I've had a lot of employees over the years that have come to me and said, listen, I have a hard time working here because people just don't like me. And I know immediately what's going on. They're not working harmoniously. They're not holding up their end. It's a guarantee. I've seen employees that are weird, just weird people. Because, you know, we hire at minimum wage. You get some weirdos, even when you try not to. And it's amazing. You get this weirdo in there, and everybody loves them. Why? Because they're doing their job well, and it makes the job for everybody else easy. And so you learn to appreciate this weirdo. He's like, yeah, he's got these funny things that he does and says. But when it gets busy, he's so taking care of it. I love working with that guy. And then you get people in there that are just, they're well-spoken. And in the beginning, everybody's like, I love that guy. And 2 weeks later, he's the guy coming to me going, people just don't like me. Yeah, you're lazy. You're not holding up your end. And people hate you. And they will continue to hate you until you hold up your end. Because they know you're taking advantage of them, and nobody likes that. America has a harmony problem. And I don't want to talk too much about politics here, but we just went through a giant showcase of how we are not harmonious with each other at all, called COVID. And, you know, when we started this nation, they were like, hey, all you states, you have different ideas? Cool. Be a nation to yourself, and we'll have a federal government. And you guys do your things your way, and you your way. And now we have a system where we all have to agree. It's not good. I think that's what's causing a lot of division. But again, I don't want to get into politics here, but we had a scenario where those who believe in individual freedoms and the ability to do what you need to do is the most important value. And then people were trying to tell them how to live. And those who believed in individual rights and individual values as the highest, most important thing out of which all good things flow, were angry at those who were trying to disrupt that. On the other side, we had a group of people that believe that protecting the community is a high value, and they were pulling together, and they were all in agreement that we should protect one another. And those other people were not pulling in the same direction. And it made them extremely angry because we had an agreement. We're a people, and we need to pull in the same direction. And I think I made that very equal, right? I think so. I hope so. The point is that when we're part of a unit and we don't pull in the same direction, it creates animosity, it creates division. And you can't pull with everybody. It's impossible. Sometimes our values are so different that we can't. That's why I think that the original United States wasn't intended for the whole nation, 50 states, to all pull in the same direction. How on earth are you going to do that? It's impossible. But the groups that you're a part of, your church, your family, your community, ideally, hopefully your neighborhood, if you're lucky to live in a neighborhood where everybody's kind of the same mind, you need to try and pull together. And when you don't push in the same direction, it creates division, it creates hatred towards one another, and dysfunction. And it's appropriate that this is the first thing mentioned after it talks about husbands and wives. Because heaven knows you have to pull in the same direction as a couple. If a family is divided against itself, that's the worst thing that can happen. But the church also, we're one body. We need to be pulling together with other churches, but especially as an individual body, we need to all be pulling in the same direction. That doesn't mean all of us have to have the same view on everything. But there needs to be a few things where we go, that's what we're pursuing. And if you're not pursuing that, hopefully it's Jesus and his top values. And if you're not pursuing that with us, you're not one of us. We might put up with you. We might be kind to you. We might love you. But you are not one of us if you're not pulling in that direction. And so we need to be harmonious, and that's in every aspect of our lives, to the best of our ability. Again, we cannot be harmonious with every point of view and with everyone. It's impossible. But especially in the church and in the family. So husbands, live with your wives in an understanding manner. She has a job to do too. Even while you're at work, she's doing things, and you need to understand. Harmony in the home is something like my wife started working recently, and I haven't done this every morning, but she gets up really early. And most mornings I've gotten up when she gets up, or shortly thereafter, or around the same time, so that we can spend some time, because we're a family and we need to pull in the same direction together. It's little things like that. For me, or for you, maybe it's when your wife is cooking dinner. Maybe you're in the kitchen with her. For me, it's the opposite. If I'm in the kitchen while my wife is cooking, she's going to tell me, why are you here? Leave. So for me, living with her in an understanding manner is even when I'm feeling outgoing and happy and I want to tell stories, I need to get out of there. Because that's the right thing to do for her, because she's laboring. So don't get in her way or watch her work. That's the worst thing I could possibly do, or anybody. Mm. Be harmonious. Be sympathetic. I heard a guy once say that the cure to being mad at people and hating people is knowing where they come from. If you understood the person you were mad at, how they grew up, the things they've been taught, the difficulties they were exposed to, and what happened to them over the last week, you would probably be exactly like them. And so the more you understand somebody, the harder it is for you to hate them. Be sympathetic. Understand. Try to get why they are the way they are and why they're suffering the way they're suffering and the reason they lash out the way they lash out or whatever it is they're doing. This morning I was at Taylor's to grab some breakfast and a bum, a homeless, unhoused, whatever, walked in and he had a blanket around him and he was walking around and I noticed him walking around and then he grabbed some candy off the shelf and kind of looked around and started walking out. And I'm like, hey, buddy. And he turned around. He's like, what? And he saw me coming. He's like, all right, what? You're going to make a big deal out of this? And he handed me the candy back. And I wasn't thinking too much about it. I do this at work sometimes, right? It's just an instinct. I see a guy do something. I go. I'm like, hey. And I didn't think about what might be going on in his life until later. But he handed the stuff back, and then I went to hang it up, and I was walking away. He was cursing at me, and I didn't even think about it, which I thought was great, because afterwards I was like, oh, there would have been a time when I've been turned around and like given him a what for, but I know he's suffering. He's just spewing because of what he's going through, and it's hard. That doesn't mean he gets to steal from Taylor's. But it doesn't hurt my feelings because I know that he's going through a hard time. Some of it of his own making, but he's a young guy. I don't know how he grew up. He might be in that position out of reasons that are completely understandable. He's probably on drugs just to deal with the emotional damage that he's went through in his life. If I would have had more thoughts, which I didn't. I wasn't thinking at all about him. Even while I was dealing with it, I'm getting ready to come here. I should have probably bought him a sandwich or something after taking his candy, but all I did was take his candy away from him. But sympathetic. It's the opposite of getting aggressive when somebody else is doing wrong. Brotherly. Two things come to mind with brotherly. Because, of course, I see brotherly here and I'm thinking like biblical brotherly. Yeah. The brotherhood. And that's true. That's good. When I think a little deeper, I'm thinking one brother kicking another and the other one kicking him back. Right? When you're talking young brothers, which is also healthy. Nothing wrong with that, you know. Not the first one who kicked, but the second one, right? You got to teach each other consequences. There's a reality right there to be dealt with. Every negative action needs a negative consequence. That's how you learn. So you got to kick back your brother. It's appropriate. But not with anger in your heart, of course. With love in your heart. But I think brotherly here, of course, is more talking about like, how do you deal with your brother as an adult, not as a child? How do you deal with your sister? Right? You help each other out. Your problem is my problem. Right? And you come alongside and there's a kinship. The there's if you want to achieve something, my resources are your resources. My brother lives in Germany, and no, my brother lives in Germany. I'm the oldest of 17, depending on how you count. So yes, I have lots of brothers and some of them live here. But my brother, right, the guy who's 2 years younger than me, so the closest to my age, the one I grew up with, my brother, he lives in Germany. And it's super sad. And nothing would make me happier than working the same job as him. Nothing would make me happier than if he moved over here. My house would be his house. My wife might have something to say about that. But that's my heart towards my brother. And I imagine that's what he's thinking here. Brotherly. All of you be brotherly or sisterly. Be completely, that's like about, there's no one I would be more devoted to, like the way I imagine it. As teenagers, different story. When I first told my brother, like, oh man, I would spend all of my time with you. He's thinking of our teenage years going, you're a liar. I think he believes me now, but. Kind-hearted. Kind-hearted. Somebody does something wrong to you. Yeah, you're not just kicking them back like brothers. But you're being gentle. You see somebody in need. You give. You care. This, with the hearted, it's more of a feeling type word. Normally, you know, when I see love in the Bible, I'm not thinking feelings or caring. I think action. We're called to love one another. That means I do what's best for you. It doesn't mean I have to like you. I was mentioning that earlier to my daughter. She's like, you don't have to say that. But to some extent, I feel like it has to be said. Your job is to love others and to care for them. Usually, it's not to like them. Once you start caring for them, the feelings will follow. If you care for somebody on a regular basis and you're acting kind-hearted towards them, eventually your feelings will catch up. You're called to obey, not to feel things. We live in a weird society nowadays where, like, you should love someone, so you sit at home and you conjure up butterflies in your tummy for them. No, nobody cares. I don't think God cares that much. Do something good for them. And then the butterflies on the inside will follow. And those are good and appropriate too, because you're bringing your feelings into harmony, that word again, into harmony with your actions. They should be in harmony. But the actions are your obedience to Christ. And the feelings are you not being, what's that word? When you're nuts going in two directions at once? Double-minded. But here, kind-hearted. It's one of the few places where that this word seems to indicate, and I haven't looked into the Greek, so maybe one of you will let me know later that I was wrong about this word, but it seems like bring up some compassion. Try to develop compassion for other people. And then humble in spirit. You know, it's really hard to do evil while you're being humble. It's really hard to bad talk somebody while being humble. It's just a good state of mind, and it doesn't have to mean to lower yourself. Once when the Lord, I don't have too many prophetic type stuff in my life, but one time when the Lord spoke to me, he talked to me about humility. And he worded it differently so that I would get it. And he was talking about healing, not physical healing necessarily, but he said, healing is the absence of pride. We're not going to get into that deeply, but that wording, the absence of pride, really spoke to me. Because when I hear humble, I hear, oh, I'm just not good enough. So I needed to hear it in a different term. I needed to hear it be an absence of pride. Stop elevating yourself. See yourself accurately. And don't see yourself as greater than. And it's amazing how little you can do wrong when you stop seeing yourself as more important, as greater than. Yes?
If I may.
Please.
Near the end of Moses' writing, there's a statement that Moses wrote, that Moses was the most humble man on the earth, above all men. We are troubled with that because we don't understand what you just said. And what you just said, I believe, is exactly what was meant there. Moses knew who Moses was.
Right.
There was no pretense. And as they came at him trying to override and become or bring him down or whatever, Moses saw very clearly who he was.
Yeah.
So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I am not done, but I will be done for today. But since this wasn't my ending, I'm like, do I have words to end it properly? I think for me this week, the thing was harmony, because that's the thing that really spoke to me. Is if you could try to live with your wife, your husband, with your church community, look around to see who that is, and be harmonious, pull in the same direction with one another and at work, the witness for the Lord is huge. Because Satan, and I think it was last week, I talked about God wants to divide us. God wants to divide us. Satan wants to divide us. Divide and conquer is his number one strategy. I think that was last week's sermon. We are Christ's. We're born of the seed of Christ, the immortal seed, which is what he calls it in the end of chapter 1. And as those who are born of Christ, we are the opposite. We should be acting the opposite of the way the devil acts. The devil wants to divide us, and we ought to be trying to bring each other together. Christ ultimately wants to bring peace. He made peace between the Father and us, and he wants to make peace among us, and he wants that message of peace to go out to those who are not saved. And that is achieved by us being the image of Christ, the image of that peace. When the world sees us, they should see the peace and the love of God. And you can do that by being divisive, by separating yourself, by elevating yourself. Those are not the methods used to conquer the world, to save the world. And that is what Jesus wants to do through you and through us as a community, as those who belong to him. All right. We do have a little bit of time for some interaction. Yes, sir.
I don't think you've spent enough time on why things are missing. The example of Sarah calling Abraham the Lord.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
Well, we covered that last week.
No. Seriously, mentioned America being kind of divided. Jesus talked about two oxen being unequally yoked. The concept there, you have a big oxen and a small oxen. So the big oxen are always pulling one direction. It's hard to get things right. And America right now is divided, and it is unequally yoked. There are those that do not have God's purpose, Christ's plan, all that. They don't have that in view. There's other, and this is causing great division in our country. So we are unequal, and that's right there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and the thought of harmony and being unequally yoked a little bit, me and my wife have often pulled into different directions. Marriages are one of those things where we often find ourselves being pulled in different directions because you're different people with different upbringings and that sort of thing. And I've watched some other relationships and, yeah, some of us are doing better than others as far as our walk. It's easy to elevate ourselves. I'm not even necessarily talking about myself, but might as well include myself with those who would elevate themselves because I have done that. I was just thinking of that because of what you just said. And I remember watching relationships where one person seems to be so put together and holy and righteous, and the other one not so much. And the judgment that one who's doing better, in quotes, has on the person that's not doing so well. And I've often thought, man, instead of judging them for having a drink while you're at worship service, I've often wondered, maybe you should be at home and drink a glass of wine with your husband or with your wife and participate in their not really sinful but not holy behavior like you. You're called to be together. And sometimes that means not being as holy as you want to be, you know? And with holy, I mean like, you know, elevated and doing the things that make you look good and holy. Some of us really need to take ourselves down a peg. Yeah?
Yeah, well, brings to mind a passage in Ecclesiastes where Solomon talks about two are better than one. Woe to him who's alone, because when he falls down, there's nobody there to help him up. And most of us think, oh, I can get up by myself. But, you know, the idea is, and you talk about marriage, there are times when one of you is up and one of you is down, and then there are times when it's the other way around.
Yeah.
And we need each other, whether
we're
up or down.
Yeah, I know I totally misused that unequally yoked thing for my own purposes there. Sorry about that. Yes.
I like your, I always appreciate your honesty, honestly. And when you're talking about the guy in Taylor's this morning, and that would be something that might happen to me too, like where I'm just oblivious to the whole picture. I'm really bad at that. Like 10 hours later, I'm like, oh, I should have bought that guy's sandwich or something, you know? And I always favor when Jesus said that a man had two sons and he said, go work in the field. And the one said, oh, I'll go. And then he didn't. And then the one said, I won't go. But later he felt bad and he did. And I'm always thankful for that story because all the time I'm like, later on I go, oh, man, I regretted missing it. And then I'll go do it. So I'll remember what you said and still go, you know, maybe you'll see him again and be able to buy him a sandwich or just at least learn. Like Christ doesn't go, oh, yeah, you didn't. You said you weren't going to go and then you did. Doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah. Thanks. All right, let's pray. Father, we come to you in the righteousness of Christ by his blood And, you know, you condescended to us. You came to earth as a man in your Son. And speak of harmony. With a sinful people, you took up the slack and you paid the price. Help us to pay each other's price. Help us to be there for one another, laugh with one another, celebrate with one another, mourn with one another, and be of one mind and pull towards you. May you be glorified in our midst this morning, Lord.